I'm a player, so I love playing in the water.
You're listening to Chickens Can't See Cubes, the podcast all about absolutely 100% true facts that are not made up. I'm your host, Piper Dawes, and with me, as always, is Christopher Parr, director of the Munchausen Institute for Totally Real Research. Hello, Chris.
Greetings.
Chris has gathered his favourite facts from the Institute's activity this week, and he's going to share them with us today. So, Chris, what's the Institute been up to this week?
Well, we've been recovering from New Year's, obviously.
Of course, yes.
And trying in these early stages of the year to keep to our New Year's resolutions.
Oh, you subscribe to that tradition. Okay. What are your New Year's resolutions, Chris?
So in a professional capacity at the Institute, I've resolved to get more facts. Find more facts. More facts than last year.
More facts than last year. Okay. Are we going to have to expand the programme a little bit? Are you going to be just having tons of material?
Well, I mean, not every fact is a winner, Piper, so I think the podcast can stay as it is.
Okay, that's fair, yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of 100% true facts that we don't actually feature in this show.
Precisely, yes. I mean, George W. Bush once ate a ham sandwich isn't exactly podcast material.
No, but it is 100% true.
It is true that George W. Bush once ate a ham sandwich, yes. That happened.
Okay, well, I mean, that's good. I'm interested, but that's fine. You know, we have got a certain calibre on this show.
I have another resolution in relation to the podcast.
All right.
I am going to try to be more patient with you, Piper.
Well, that's very good. I am obviously very, very low down on the intelligence food chain compared to someone as incredibly clever and knowledgeable about true facts as you, Chris. But like, it's good that you're throwing me a bone. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I mean, you're not an academic or an expert in anything. So I'm going to try to be more understanding when you get something wrong or don't know anything about anything.
Oh, lovely. Thank you. That's very kind. That's really good of you. Do you think you'll ever, throughout 2021, take the next step in our relationship and maybe listen to some ska music?
I have listened to ska music. That's why I hate it.
Can't say fairer than that, I suppose.
Did you think that I just hated ska music on principle without actually listening to it?
Well, I guess I must. I thought I listened to ska music and I absolutely love it. So I thought, well, I mean, you can't have listened to it because it's great. There's no way you could possibly have heard a single note of ska music. Otherwise, you'd have donned your Hawaiian shirt and your trilby and come dancing down the front of some very loud, obnoxious party gig with me.
Well, that is I can see why you might think that, Piper. And while I don't agree, I respect your right to hold that faulty opinion.
You're doing very well so far, Chris. Should we do some facts?
Yeah, before I have a breakdown.
That brings us on to our very first fact of the year. What have we got here, Chris?
The genitals of the roving gonad mantis can move to any part of the insect's body.
Right, okay. Well, I mean, the animal kingdom is full of weird sex stuff in it. I mean, male bean beetles they've got spiky penises which aid the sperm transference. It's gonna get very mucky, this. A lot of flies have got 3-inch long sperm. That's weird. That's another weird thing that I know about, that I found that on Wikipedia. Bed bugs, they hit their potential mates over the head with their penis, then stab them with it before injecting their sperm. The female's then eaten alive by her young. Not straight away, obviously, she has to like gestate for a bit and then she gets eaten alive. But yeah, I mean, mantises, we all know, we've heard about how weird mantises are with sex and stuff. They're like no stranger to odd mating rituals. Like we know that females usually decapitate the males after sex, but this is an interesting development in what we know about their sexual practices. What's the story, Chris?
So you've already alluded to some of the strange courtship rituals in the animal kingdom, and as you say, mantises have been known to or female mantises have been known to eat the males as they mate. The courtship ritual of the roving gonad mantis, which lives in the Amazon rainforest, involves the female fleeing from her chosen male partner and the male stealthily stalking the female through the leaves and underbrush, searching for an opportunity to pounce and commence copulation.
Great. Sounds like a very healthy courtship.
Yeah, so because of the opportunistic nature of the ritual, the male mantis might not come upon the female in a position fortuitous for mating. And we might end up having to approach from above, for example, or maybe even from the front.
Disaster.
But the male roving gonad mantis doesn't let a little thing like poor positioning get in the way of getting off. As its name suggests, the male's genitals can move to whatever part of the body is most convenient once he's cornered the female.
Okay, so it just moves around till it finds a hole that works.
Yeah, the problem for the male roving gonad mantis is not every part of his body is suitable for the emergence of spermatophores, the massive sperm that he deposits inside the female. So the mantis's genitals will sometimes just burst from whatever part of his body is most convenient. So, for example, if he happens to approach the female from below, his genitals might erupt from his head.
Okay. When you say burst from its body, do you mean it just like fucks off? It just like, it comes out and it's like, okay, ready. Oh, wait, this is a bad part of the body to come out of. I'm not attached, and just leaves the body entirely.
You seem to have the John Hurt alien birth scene from Alien in your head here, I think.
Yeah, and if you tell me now that that's not right, then I'm going to be really disappointed with this fact.
The mantis's genitals are still attached to his body, like from the insides of his body. They just reach the insect's carapace.
Oh, this is weird, isn't it? They are like aliens, aren't they?
Well, no, because they are from the Earth.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
Although these ones are from the Amazon rainforest, so they would be aliens if they came to this country.
Right, yeah. And actually, in a very serious sense, Chris, in the depths of the Amazon rainforest, as with deep in the Mariana Trench, essentially to us, they kind of are aliens, a lot of these creatures, because we're discovering new creatures in the Amazon rainforest and in the depths of the ocean all the time. So they pretty much are just like completely new way of living, a way of mating, way of, you know, all of these things are really, really, really interesting. So it's really cool to, is this a new discovery, this mantis?
No, this has been known for a while.
Okay, but we're bringing it to the public eye because it's fascinating and 100% true. So if his willy comes out of his head, what happens then?
Well, genital eruption, as it's called, can be fatal. But even if the male roving gonad mantis dies after being torn apart by his own bits, the good times don't have to end. A dead and ruptured mantis can still complete mating. And some entomologists theorise that death might even intensify the male's delivery of sperm.
All right, Chris. I mean, obviously in the animal kingdom, mating rituals are very different, you know, compared to human ones, obviously. But considering how this particular mating ritual begins, do you think there's any actual enjoyment involved for the female?
I mean, it's difficult to tell without asking them or doing some kind of brain scan while they're doing it. I don't know. But I mean, it's an interesting question because given how quick and sometimes brutal mating often is in the animal kingdom, it's easy to wonder how much female animals get out of it, especially in the so-called lower animals, like insects, where it's basically just, you know, things like this, like males pouncing on them and then being ripped apart by their own bits. I do wonder then if the act isn't particularly enjoyable for the female. Maybe a lot of male animals, or those who aren't ripped apart by their own genitals at least, think that their sexual partners have this weird kink where they always brush their teeth after sex.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're not that different from the animal kingdom after all. I knew this would be fun. say, Chris, I mean, growing up, learning about different species of mantis and how, as we said before, about them sort of decapitating and eating the males while they're having sex.
It was interesting to note on that point, Piper, that sexual cannibalism in mantises doesn't actually happen that often in the wild, but it happens a lot in captivity.
Oh, really? Well, why do you think that is?
Entomologists think it might have something to do with, like, the difference in conditions between a mantis in captivity and a mantis in the wild, altering their behaviour.
Okay, so something like maybe, like, oh, I haven't been able to actually go on a decent walk, and all this guy wants to do is have sex with me. Kill the man! Kill the man! Take his head off, and I'll just liquefy his insides, because I need some fresh air. This is shit.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense to me. I understand that completely. But yeah, like it's quite clear from this fact and other interesting facts that I've heard about mantises. Like, they are fascinating. Any other fun mantis facts, Chris?
I mean, you've already touched on this a bit, but one interesting fact about mantises is that they are cool as fuck.
Well, I mean, yeah.
You and our listeners should do a Google search for the ghost mantis, which is cool, the wandering violin mantis, which is also cool, and the devil's flower mantis, which is really cool.
I mean, they all sound like almost sort of supernatural, really. Like, got devils and ghosts and...
Well, it's interesting you should mention that, Piper, because various civilizations have attributed various supernatural powers to the mantis.
That's even more interesting. Okay, I didn't know we were going down that path. What does the Institute think of that? Do you think they are in some way supernatural?
No, I'm just saying that various ancient civilizations have attributed various supernatural powers to the mantis.
Oh, okay.
There was there was a very short-lived monastic order in the 12th century, which considered the mantis God's most devoted creature because of its prayer-like stance.
Oh, okay. Okay, so they think because it's got its arms together all the time, it's clearly praying to God.
Yeah, and this order strove to emulate the mantis in all walks of life, even going so far as to practice sexual cannibalism.
Oh. I feel like maybe that was the wrong reaction.
I think "aw" is the wrong reaction to eating somebody during sex.
But I've evolved, Chris. I realised that straight away. But I didn't know how to react at all. I don't know why "aw" was the... Yeah. any others?
No, that's it. I mean, I'm afraid that if I did have any others, you would just think that they were adorable rather than disturbing.
Yeah, fair. So that brings us on to our second fact of 2021. I'm going to stop doing that after this one. That was the last time. What have we got, Chris?
China believed that the USA had developed advanced aircraft because of the film Stealth.
Okay, so the 2005 Rob Cohen film Stealth is a slightly fantastical military science fiction action movie about robotic stealth technology. It's cool, but it's not really something to be considered factual. What happened, Chris?
So as you say, Stealth was released in 2005 and is a rather preposterous military sci-fi adventure in which Josh Lucas, Jamie Foxx and Jessica Biel, the three J's, pilot advanced stealth bombers and combat a rogue artificial intelligence. It's very loud and stupid and, as you say, clearly has nothing to do with actual military hardware or AI technology. However, the Chinese were somehow taken in by the whole thing. Members of the Chinese military got hold of a bootleg copy of Stealth on DVD, watched it, and became convinced that the Hollywood blockbuster was evidence of American military advances in stealth technology and artificial intelligence.
I don't know if anyone at home has seen the film Stealth, but it is not particularly believable. You wouldn't think it was anything other than just a film, right? I mean, so they saw it on DVD and they thought, right, yeah, do you know what? It's probably a documentary, but like a secret one or something. What did they do with their findings, Chris?
But it's kind of like the aliens in Galaxy Quest.
Oh my God, it is!
the Chinese military spent a great deal of time and money attempting to reverse engineer the stealth bombers featured in Stealth, based on the scant few technical specifications the writers made up for the film. And they also tried applying the film's trite and superficial dialogue surrounding the workings of AI to their own artificial intelligence program. And unsurprisingly, neither of those bore any fruit.
Oh, can you imagine if just by coincidence, it was real? You know, like they'd made a movie about, you know, artificial intelligence and, you know, technology, robots and all of that. And they'd accidentally, you know, they'd have never figured it out on their own, the makers of the film. But the Chinese had taken it so seriously, they'd actually put time and effort and money and all sorts of like stuff into making it a thing. And they just went, oh, shit, this works. And then the Americans are like, oh, but it was just a film. Can we have some of that, please?
Again, that's kind of like the plot of the film Galaxy Quest.
Oh, yeah. Well, to be honest, Chris, I feel like I might just get a lot of my information from films, if it's not Wikipedia, you know. but whatever the case, obviously I'm upset that they didn't discover artificial intelligence or anything like that, but it sounds like they were really serious about this. What is it that made them think that Stealth might be more than a daft science fiction movie?
Well, it all boiled down to a misunderstanding. Based on a mistranslation, the Chinese had thought that the FBI warning that appeared when they played the DVD was actually some sort of official classification of state secrets, which raises all sorts of questions about how they could have thought that Josh Lucas, Jamie Foxx and Jessica Biel were actual military personnel, and why this military document had for some reason taken the form of a formulaic action-packed narrative.
Maybe they just thought that's what America's like.
Yeah, everything's huge, even their military documents.
Base-plosions, just all the time. Yeah, well, I can sort of, in some small way, I can sort of see that. Because if I ever saw a film or like a trailer or anything for an American film where we hadn't got the BBFC classification that we get in the UK, because we get a slightly different thing here. If I saw a preview or something when I was younger, like sometimes I'd think, they've got FBI at the beginning of the thing and that's from the X-Files. What could this mean? Like, I have very little idea of what the FBI actually did. I thought they just like look for aliens. Like, that was my understanding. So I was like, why is the FBI on this DVD? It must be important.
But in the X-Files, was it Mulder or Scully who was the believer? I can't remember.
As Mulder, yeah.
Because Mulder was like a pariah in the FBI, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So he couldn't have thought that's the whole FBI search for aliens, because if they did, he wouldn't have been a pariah.
No, but the thing is, it's not like I had the X-Files box set when I was like...
Okay, so you've seen a couple of episodes and you thought, oh, he's in the FBI, therefore the FBI looks for aliens.
Precisely, okay. That's genuinely what I thought.
That makes more sense, and that is a valid thing to think, based on the amount of information you had gathered, regardless of the fact that you hadn't thought to gather more information, which you could have, but you chose not to, which is fine. That's all right.
Thank you. Oh, I feel like this one's going so much better than they normally do. Oh, I need to calm down. They thought this FBI warning was somehow some official classification of state secrets. Fine. Okay. But what did they think it actually said if they mistranslated it so badly?
The initial translation read, "It is illegal to remove this classified document and give it to another. Those in charge will punish the copying of these secrets with cramped conditions and a monetary exchange."
I see what's happened. Yeah. Okay.
The whole thing seems to hinge on the idea that classified and copyrighted are kind of similar concepts, and so when translated into Chinese, the ambiguity resulted in them believing that a copyrighted document was a classified document.
I imagine that probably happens all the time. So, Chris, have you watched Stealth?
Yes.
All right, is it possible that it does actually contain state secrets?
I suppose it's possible. The film did have the cooperation of the US Navy, but I imagine they would have been very careful not to allow any secret Navy stuff to appear on camera. So I suppose if stealth does contain military secrets, they'd be very subtly placed, the kind of stuff people wouldn't recognise as military secrets. And it might explain the downturn in Jessica Biel's career in the years after the film. Maybe she knew secrets from the production and she made some sort of deal. Jessica Biel made a deal.
The deal Biel. The Biel deal. Yeah, I mean, having done lots and lots of research on YouTube about conspiracy theories, Chris, the government in the United States of America, they really like hiding in plain sight and like hiding like little symbols and little sort of ideas and clues as to what they're really up to within normal public domain stuff, you know?
Which seems like a really bad way to do a conspiracy. This is super secret, guys, which is exactly why we're going to put our logo on everything.
Ah, oh, but it's dick swinging, isn't it, Chris? You've seen the American government. You know what they're like? They're like, yeah, secret, but you know what we're going to do? We're going to laugh at the public for not noticing that the all-seeing eye is on their own bloody money. They literally exchange it every day. Oh, you know what, Chris? I know I'm going to bite off more than I can chew with you today, because like I can already hear you seething through the microphone. You're trying really hard, and I'll just drop it, okay?
How could you hear it through the microphone?
I used to run a recording studio, Chris. Emphasis on the used to. Yeah, good point. So I got carried away there, unsurprisingly. Please feel free to cut all of it. So, Chris, is this the first time the Chinese government's mistaken an American movie for military intelligence?
Surprisingly, no. Back in the 80s, they thought that Top Gun was an accurate portrayal of how American fighter pilots are trained, right down to assuming that romances with the instructor were a mandatory part of the training.
I've not seen Top Gun, so I can't comment too much on this, but I was kind of under the impression it was a gay porno.
So part of the plot has Tom Cruise's character having a relationship with the female instructor, but there is a great deal like homoerotic camaraderie between the pilots.
Oh, okay. So yeah, like this is a thing with 1980s action that a lot of the sort of like broing down actually today seems kind of campy, doesn't it? And it hits a little differently, as the kids say.
Yeah, like the like rivalry between Tom Cruise and his rival. Like basically now looks like they want to bum each other, but they can't quite admit it properly.
Right, so going back to what you were saying then, that they thought that was basically what it's like.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the 90s, the Chinese military bought huge amounts of the small soldiers' action figures, thinking that they actually contained the X-1000 microprocessor, which gave the film's action figure a sentience.
Well, I can understand the desire for that to be the case, because that's very cool, but...
It's rather ironic as well, because the Chinese should have known that the figures didn't contain an advanced military microchip, because the figures, as with most American products, were made in China.
Yes, that is slightly ironic, Chris. Okay, well, that brings us on to our third fact of the show. What is this fact about, Chris?
This fact is about a man who spent his life trying to get revenge against the iceberg which sank the Titanic.
Okay, well, as we all know, the Titanic was a ship built in the early 1900s to help poor people and rich people get to know each other. The ship also transported treasure, including the Heart of the Ocean, an ancient gem belonging to the mother island Tahiti. The heart is stolen by one of the poor people and given to a rich woman in exchange for sexy sex in the back of an old car. The ship sinks because ice is harder than metal, and everybody dies, including the poor person, because the rich lady was too rich. Everyone was obviously a bit cross at the ice, but ultimately it was the fault of the shipbuilder's overconfidence and the selfish rich people. So who was this man, Chris, and why does he blame the ice?
Harold Manville was just 13 years old when his mother died during the sinking of the Titanic in 1912. And when he received the news, the young man swore vengeance against the iceberg that had taken his mother's life.
Right, when you say he swore vengeance, did he just like melt all ice on sight, hoping it had at one point belonged to the original Titanic killing iceberg? I mean, I can't imagine how a 13-year-old could act out revenge against ice.
Right, well, he's not acting out revenge against ice, like, in general, just the specific iceberg that sank the Titanic.
Right.
So Manville spent his teenage years studying with the world's leading glaciologists to learn as much as he could about his foe. Because, as Sun Tzu said, know your enemy. Then, in 1921, Manville joined the newly formed International Ice Patrol, which monitors icebergs in the Atlantic Ocean. He stayed with the IIP for over 40 years, seeing the move from aerial surveillance to radar and sonar, and even the first computer to be installed on an IIP ship. However, in those 40 years, he never found his quarry.
I mean, that is pretty unsurprising, Chris. Ice is basically all the same when it comes down to it, isn't it, really? But, like, did he just give up in the end?
No, he stuck with it. And then in 1965, the ice-breaking ship Manville was serving on came across an iceberg, which, according to IIP data, eyewitness accounts, and Manville's own research, he was convinced was the iceberg which had sunk the Titanic and killed his mother.
Oh, wow. So he thought he'd found the same actual iceberg that actually sunk the same actual Titanic and killed his same actual mother. What did he do?
The actual Manville abandoned his post on the ship and climbed onto the iceberg. He refused to come back aboard and told his crewmates to just leave without him. The last anybody saw of Harold Manville, he was just sat on the ice.
So he was just sat there, just waved the ship off, just like, cheers, guys. Cheers for the lift. I'll just hang out here. Do you know what? Did you just want to sit on the ice? Did you just want to sit on it like a school bully? Like, there you go. Sat on you now. Can't move. do you know what he planned to do at all to the iceberg?
He rarely spoke of his vendetta to others. And given that the last anyone saw of him was him just sitting there on the iceberg, it's possible that not even he knew what he planned to do. He was so focused on finding the iceberg, on getting revenge, that he might not have even thought about what he'd do if he ever found his mother's killer.
Oh, right. So, I mean, yeah, like, basically him just sat there. It's possible that essentially he was just, like, coming to the realisation that his entire life's work is kind of over. That's quite sad, really, Chris.
It is a bit sad, yeah. That being said, Manville was known to always carry a box of matches with him.
It does have some implications that generates some more questions, Chris.
What kind of questions?
I'm assuming that he wanted to melt the ice with the matches, but I feel like that might take a while.
Yeah, I mean, again, his obsession was such that he might not have actually thought that part through.
Yeah, I mean, he'd need some kindling or something at least.
It's almost like a symbol for humanity's insignificance against the vastness of nature.
It's almost like it's a metaphor that's been made up to precisely describe that, Chris, even though it is a 100% true fact, obviously.
Well, sometimes facts can have a greater meaning. They can enrich our lives in ways other than factual accuracy.
Yeah, like a fable.
A fable that's actually true, yes.
Yes, yeah. So is this Manville dude, he really didn't like ice then, did he? Well, this bit of ice, he didn't like it. So is this the first time anyone's had an actual vendetta against ice, Chris?
Certainly on this scale. And no one seemed to have had a grudge against as large a piece of ice as an iceberg, except for Harold Manville. But the lobbyist group Consumers Against Ice campaigns against vendors putting loads of ice in drinks. So that kind of counts.
Oh, yeah, because it dilutes it or some bollocks.
Well, it dilutes, and also when you go to, like, a fast food restaurant and you get a drink, they, like, fill the cup half with ice so that you can put less, you know, Coca-Cola in your cup.
Yeah. Do you know what really annoys me, though? Because I actually do work in a bar. What really annoys me is when people say, I'll be like, oh, do you want ice with your shot? And then they say, oh, yeah, well, make it a double then because I'll have less alcohol in it if you put ice in it. Like, it's a shot. It is the same amount of liquid. I mean, I know that I'm pretty fucking stupid, but, like, you wouldn't believe the amount of people that don't understand that concept. It's a measured amount of liquid. It's the same whatever I put in with it. Oh, yeah, but the ice melts, so then it's less. No, it's not. Yeah, no, I'm very cross about that. But anyway, what were we talking about? Yeah, the Titanic obviously really interests me. It's a very, very interesting historical account of a very strange story, really. But are there any other interesting facts about the Titanic itself?
Well, as we already know, the sinking of the Titanic was possibly caused by the very same ancient Egyptian curse which caused Manchester City Football Club to lose the 2013 FA Cup final.
Yes.
And there are quite a number of conspiracy theories surrounding the sinking of the Titanic. Some believe that it was an elaborate insurance scam perpetrated by the ship's builders.
What, so they built one of the most technologically advanced and also largest objects known to man as a scam?
Well, no, the story there was they had two ships. There was a Titanic and a sister ship. But the sister ship was damaged in a collision with a naval ship and the insurers wouldn't pay out. So the conspiracy theory is that they then kind of like basically switched the ships and the Titanic that sunk was actually the sister ship. So they got the insurance payout for that in lieu of the insurance payout that they wanted to get for the original accident. Others think that it was a botched assassination attempt.
Oh, assassination of who?
Of some bankers, apparently. According to the theory, the assassin failed to kill their targets discreetly, and so they did literally the only other thing they could think of, sink an entire ocean liner.
Oh, it's a different time, isn't it, Chris? They just think differently.
It's kind of like the ocean-going version of snakes on a plane. It's like, I've tried to kill this witness just using a normal assassin. That didn't work. Therefore, the only other thing I can think to do is put snakes on a plane. There are even those who believe that the Titanic never actually existed and that its sinking was a hoax.
Wait, it's the biggest ship of its time. How can they think that?
Well, the most popular version of this theory has the hoax perpetrated by the Wright brothers in an attempt to discredit ocean travel and get people to invest in their own nascent air travel.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, I can see how that might have happened.
And David Icke has weighed in on the whole Titanic thing.
Oh, of course he fucking has.
Claiming that the Titanic never existed and the whole thing was an illusion beamed from the moons of Saturn to discourage people from exploring the oceans because that's where the reptilians have their secret base.
Amazing. Amazing. Okay, so that brings us round to our fourth and final fact of the show. What's this, Chris?
A cinema in Scotland has played nothing but Jurassic Park for the last 27 years.
I mean, Jurassic Park is a bloody great film, so I'm not really surprised this has happened. What do we know, Chris?
So, Steven Spielberg's absolute banger of a dinosaur-filled adventure. Do you call films a banger? What's the film equivalent of that, do you know?
I think banger's fine. I mean, well, banger implies it's like, that's the musical thing, isn't it? So then, what's a visual version of a bang? A whiz? It's a whizzer of a film.
All right. Steven Spielberg's absolute whizzer of a dinosaur-filled adventure.
Yep, that's sticking. I love it.
Was an immediate hit in the Highland town of Elsbeth, easily breaking the town's previous box office record set by Jason and the Argonauts. In fact, Jurassic Park is so popular in Elsbeth that it has played continuously on their cinema's single screen ever since its release.
But there have been so many good films that have come out during the last 27 years. Are you telling me the people of Elsbeth never saw the new Star Wars films?
Well, you might have seen it on DVD, like in their own homes. But in their cinema, there are two screenings of Jurassic Park a day, and they're never less than half full. Jurassic Park makes so much money for the cinema that its owners declined to screen such box office smashes as Titanic, Avatar, and even Jurassic Park's own sequels, all for fear of losing the cinema's devoted customer base.
I mean, it doesn't surprise me too much because, as like I say, I mean, it is an amazing film, and it's just a testament to how amazing it actually is that people are still, after 27 years, just like continuing to go. But like, it is weird though. Like, this cinema in Elsbeth, they've never had like a special day, like a Lord of the Rings day or a Harry Potter day, where they play any different film to Jurassic Park. It's just wall to wall Jurassic Park all day, every day, all the time.
They do have a Jurassic Park day, even though it's all they play. They do have a Jurassic Park day in celebration of the historic day the film was first screened in the town. The 28th of August is Jurassic Park Day in Elsbeth. The number of screenings are bumped up to 5, and people flock to the cinema dressed as their favourite characters or even dinosaurs from the film. So there's lots of Alan Grants and Ian Malcolms and Velociraptors and Dilophosauruses in the audience.
Okay, so they do have like special days. It's still Jurassic Park. I'm trying to get my head around this. 27 years, Chris, so they've never played any other films in that whole 27 years.
The continuous screenings of Jurassic Park have only been interrupted once during the past 27 years. Last year, the cinema changed management and the new owners tried to screen the wildly popular Avengers Endgame because of how much money it was making around the world.
Yeah, of course.
In response to which, there were protests and even riots on the streets of Elsbeth. The residents threatened to tear the cinema apart before the one and only screening of Avengers Endgame in Elsbeth was cut short 45 minutes in, and Jurassic Park was reinstated to much cheering, T-Rex roars and raptor calls.
Wow, they must really, really like Star Wars.
Not
Star Wars. Let's do that again. Fucking hell. Wow, they must really like Jurassic Park in Elsbeth. Okay. So apart from Avengers Endgame, which is obviously a fantastic film, and I can understand why they tried to replace Jurassic Park with that.
It was fine. A bit long.
So apart from that, they literally just played Jurassic Park. Nothing else.
Yeah, just Jurassic Park.
Just the film Jurassic Park in the cinema in Elsbeth, just that film. No other films apart from Avengers Endgame, but just basically that film.
Yes, Piper, that is what we've spent the past 10 minutes talking about, yeah. Well done for listening, which is great. Yeah, it's fantastic you've listened to me, Piper. I'm really happy about that.
Good. Yeah, no. Yeah, thank you. It's good to get a not even Bicentennial Man.
No, not even. Right, not even the smaltzy sci-fi drama starring Robin Williams, Bicentennial Man, no.
Yeah, okay. American Beauty?
So when I say they screened no other films, that means no other films. So, and I'm just saving you time here, Piper. So there's no point asking me about other films because the answer will just be no. So save yourself some time, Piper.
Hey, okay. No, I do understand. I understand. I get it. It's just a long time for just one, not even Deep Impact. I'm done. I'm sorry. Please don't hang up. Right. Well, okay. So we're both basically agreed on the fact that Jurassic Park is fucking phenomenal. But like, what is it about that film that makes it so popular in this particular Highland town of Elsbeth in Scotland?
Well, it's got dinosaurs in it. Why wouldn't it be popular? It's got dinosaurs, Jeff Goldblum, and a man getting eaten on the toilet. Dinosaurs, Goldblum, and toilet death. The big three.
other blockbusters can only aspire to such glorious scenes.
As to why it's popular in Elsbeth specifically, there's been at least one anthropological study into the phenomenon, and it couldn't pin down any particular reason. They just love everything about Jurassic Park up there in Elsbeth. The town has even adopted a John Williams main theme as the town's official song.
Wow. Okay. So it sounds like it could be sort of a similar way to the way memes propagate almost. It's like there doesn't actually have to be rhyme or reason to it. It's not something that could have been predicted or that's logical at all. It's just they found an affinity and almost an identity as a town with Steven Spielberg's film Jurassic Park, which has got dinosaurs in and toilet death.
It'll be interesting to see if it maintains its popularity in the next few years. As children in Ellsworth now grow up, maybe they won't be as interested in Jurassic Park as their parents are. And so in a few years' time, they might demand some other film be shown.
So yeah, it might be that the next generation just sort of won't get the joke.
It's not a joke, Piper. Jurassic Park is serious business. It's got dinosaurs in it.
I'm so sorry. I can only apologise. I didn't mean joke. Obviously, I didn't mean joke. That's not what I meant at all. This is a very serious subject. Won't get the importance of the film. So that'll be interesting. Well, keep us updated, Chris. Obviously, it didn't work with Avengers Endgame, and one can only postulate as to why such a fantastic film didn't get as good a reception as they were expecting as the new owners of the unofficial Jurassic Park cinema. But if the Munchausen Institute owned a cinema and put on the same film every day, What would it be?
Well, as good as Jurassic Park is, we, in our capacity as a research institute dealing in totally true facts, would have to screen a documentary of some kind, obviously.
Okay, yeah.
One of my favourite documentaries is This Is Spinal Tap, about the British rock band Spinal Tap. But there's a few other good documentaries that could be shown in the institute's hypothetical single screen cinema. There's Waiting for Guffman, about a small town theatre production. Best in Show, about dog shows. And A Mighty Wind, about folk music. All great and totally true documentaries that haven't been made up. Honest.
Stealth, however, not a documentary. Great. I mean, that's great, Chris. It was sort of a bit of a daft question, so I'm glad you took it seriously. Well, as we've both developed quite a clear affinity for Jurassic Park, I've got to ask you, Chris, what's your favourite dinosaur of all the dinosaurs?
Obviously, it's the Velociraptors from Jurassic Park.
Obviously? Why obviously?
Well, because they're cool and they've got those big claws on their feet that go tippy-tap on the floor.
That's true, and they'll bite your kneecaps off.
And they're clever. They can open doors, Piper. That's terrifying. And I'm always disappointed when the T-Rex kills them at the end because I wanted the raptors to tear the T-Rex apart. That would have been cool.
Yes. Yeah. It almost doesn't make sense because they've been billed as the underdog.
But did you know that the Velociraptors in Jurassic Park are actually based on the dinosaur Deinonychus?
But Velociraptors are an actual thing, aren't they?
Yeah, but actual Velociraptors are small. But the name Velociraptor is obviously much cooler than the name Deinonychus. So the raptors in the film are really just Deinonychus, but called Velociraptor. So I suppose my actual favourite dinosaur is Deinonychus.
That is interesting.
Also, Deinonychus and Velociraptors probably had feathers, which a lot of people don't like, but I think is super cool.
No, that is cool. And I read a meme on the internet with no source that said that not only did they probably have feathers, they probably also squawked like birds or possibly even quacked like ducks, which I find hilarious.
Brilliant, yeah. I mean, Jurassic World was pretty shit, but it would have been marginally less shit if the raptors had been rocking feathers and quacked.
I think it would have been improved.
What's your favourite dinosaur, Piper?
Thank you. Bloody hell. Gosh, thought you'd never ask. My favourite dinosaur is the Stegosaurus because it's got those weird plates on its back, and I think that's really cool. And one can only imagine what they're used for. Possibly some sort of rudimentary dinosaur version of ping pong.
Go on.
They'd only be able to play with other stegosauruses, so it wouldn't really be fair on the other dinosaurs.
Oh, well, maybe stegosauruses were the only dinosaurs who liked ping pong. And all the others were really sick of the stegosauruses always banging on about ping pong. Oh, great, here comes Stegosaurus. I could be talking about ping pong again.
Hey, guys, have you played ping pong? Oh, I told you. Fucking told you. No, either that or the other dinosaurs really want to play ping pong, but the stegosauruses don't think they do because they're always like, no, I didn't want to play anyway. No, it's fine. I didn't know. I know you didn't bring a spare bat because it's attached to your fucking tail. Prick. All right, that's it. You've been listening to Chickens Can't See Cubes with me, Piper Dawes. I can be found on Twitter at Piper Talks and Christopher Parr from the Munchausen Institute.
I can be found on Twitter at Trilby Norton, and the Institute can be found at Muinfotorere, which is spelt Muinfotorere.
And you can contact the podcast on Twitter at CCubes, that's SEECUBES, and Facebook and Instagram at Chickens Can't See Cubes. Please be sure to rate and review this episode on your chosen podcast app. And thanks for listening to Chickens Can't See Cubes.
And remember, you probably could make it up, but we haven't. Honest.
And we'll catch you once again on next week's show. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye. But even if the male roving gonadvantus dies after being torn apart by his own bits, the good times don't have to end. A dead and ruptured mantis can still complete.
Oh, I really tried to hold that together. Oh, no.
No, in my head, that was like vaguely amusing, but as soon as I said it, I thought that's really fucking funny.
Go on, try again.